Talk Show.
Recorded live.
Hello, this is William Fink for Eli James and Yahweh's Covenant People, Saturday, June 20th, 2009. This show was not supposed to happen. Actually, we had hoped to broadcast a conference that we had planned on Paul of Tarsus, to which we invited many Paul bashers who didn't show up. When we arrived today at the hall, at the American Legion Hall on Main Street in Binghamton, Eli had begun over his cell phone to give the address of the meeting place out to several people who had expressed interest earlier and to whom he would not give the address out any earlier than this morning for fear of certain parties wishing to break up the meeting. And that happened anyway. It's absolutely amazing how the socialists and the Marxists and our colleges can act so quickly and have such a well-oiled machine. I don't know how the opposition or those who would be opposed to us found out about this meeting in Binghamton today, except that they must watch Eli's website a lot more closely than we imagined. Because certain parties managed to convince Eli that they honestly wanted to attend this meeting, and he gave them the address of the meeting only hours before. And in that short span of time, as we went and grabbed a bite to eat to lunch, they convinced the New York Times to call the American Legion Hall, or somebody convincingly called the American Legion Hall, and this is what I believe, insisting that they were calling from the New York Times, convinced the American Legion Hall, who didn't question us about it, that we were some sort of anti-Semitic hate group. And when we returned from a bite to eat, we were in and you know, wanted to plan and get set up for this meeting, we were informed that they were canceling our rental of the hall because we were anti-Semites. Now, this hall had a plaque hanging up in it, a rather large one that we have a photograph of, which expressed how the American Legion sought to uphold the United States Constitution, part of which is the First Amendment guarantee of freedom of speech. Well, evidently, freedom of speech in this day and age means freedom of speech as long as you agree with certain ideologies that, of course, we do not subscribe to. So, evidently, because we do not subscribe to these ideologies, our meeting was canceled by the venue where it was to be held. That's just incredible. And Eli James stands there talking to the guy from the American Legion with his Vietnam veteran's hat on, and evidently being a Vietnam veteran in the American Legion is not as good as being a Jew reporter for the New York Times or a Jew rabble-rouser associated with some college anti-hate club or whoever it was that had dogged the meeting venue. And that's what happened to the Paul conference. But that's okay, because when we write about it, it will, in the end, it'll all become worthwhile. The Marxist, in the 1920s, and this reminded me just of 1920s Germany. There were 15 or 20 college kids standing across the street waiting for participants to this meeting to show up. And obviously to harass or to scream epithets or whatever they had intended on doing. It doesn't matter to me. They dispersed after some time. But they were 15, 20 college kids usually don't stand across the street from an American Legion hall for nothing. Evidently, whether it's the Southern Poverty Law Center or the ADL or whoever watches Eli's website had seen the message about the meeting in Binghamton, and they rallied the local Marxist club at the college to harass it. That's the way the Marxists operate. You can have free speech as long as you agree with their ideology. That's the route that America is taking. And the election of Marxists like Barack Obama to high public office only encourages these people to increase their own activities and to do more of what they do. It emboldens them. And in this day and age, they have obviously become very emboldened. And we don't have the organization or the firepower to match theirs. That's just the way it is. We don't have the ability to rally the troops and to get together the way they do. The Marxist indoctrination of our college students is very, very deep today. And yes, it's in the USA. The USA is a Marxist state. We have a Marxist in the White House. All of our educational institutions have been taken over by Marxists. It's happened, and it's real. That's my summary of what happened today. Eli will probably be able to tell it with more detail. He got there before I did. He talked to the management of the American Legion Hall, and I wasn't quite there. I just told them to mail me a refund check, and I didn't care, and I just go with the program. If anybody would, I have Greg Howard here, and maybe he could tell a story from his perspective. And actually, Skip Baker is here too. So maybe if Greg wants to pick up the phone and say a few words, and I'll sit here and drink my coffee.
Greetings, brethren. Yeah, we had an interesting day, and I just had the thought that, when you poke a stick into a hornet's nest, the hornets come swarming out. And that seems like what it was today. But it worked out well. We ended up getting to a small group of us to fellowship and hang out at a restaurant, and the fellowship was good and sweet, and it was encouraging to me to see that such a small group yet generated such a response from the enemies, and it just shows that what we have is the truth. Because any other group that would want to do such a thing, who would care? But our little gathering generated a big response. I don't know, Bill, what would you say? I think we saw at least 14, 15, 16 protesters out there just looking to cause trouble and chant. And I don't know. It was just bizarre, but not unexpected. And I got to admit, Eli handled it like a champ. Clearly not the first time that he's run into that. So all in all, I'd say it worked out well, and we spent the afternoon fellowshipping, and we're fellowshipping now, and we're going to fellowship more later tonight. So praise Yahweh. It was a good day, and that's it.
Boris, how you doing? Come on now, don't be shy. Hello?
Hello?
Okay. Boris?
Yes?
Oh, okay. So why don't you tell us what Brian relayed to you?
Oh. Okay. Here's what Brian told me. I got a call around about 5 minutes to one my time today from Brian. He just told me that the event was canceled, and there were protesters, and they were just leaving as these protesters showed up. And he also told me that there was a biker gang that was having a meeting there, and he thought the protesters were going to stir up crap with them because they weren't sure who Pastor Eli was.
Right. We had sort of hoped that. That would have been funny. There was a bike club meeting in a separate room in the American Legion Hall where we were supposed to be.
Yeah. And then after that, they were in the car. Then all of a sudden, Brian said that he was being tailed by a group of people following them around town. And eventually, you took a wrong turn, and they turned too, and you pulled up to the side of the road in the car.
Right. It was fortuitous that we took a wrong turn, and Greg sort of got us on a highway that we didn't really belong on, and that's how we lost them. That was pretty funny. Because Greg and I didn't know, we were in the lead car, and we didn't know that we were being followed, but Eli and Brian behind us did when we were leaving the meeting venue. It was actually pretty funny. It was just by chance that I didn't pay attention to where Greg was going, and he ended up on the wrong highway, and we had to turn around, and that lost them. That was pretty funny. They were probably only trying to see where we were headed to, that's all. I don't think they wanted any confrontation. But, yeah, that's how our meeting went. It was canceled because a couple of college kids shook up the American Legion. That's pretty incredible. I still can't fathom that. And I plan on writing them about it, but I wasn't in the mood to stand there and argue with them at 1 o'clock this afternoon. I don't think it would have done any good, and it probably would have only attracted bad press and bad attention, negative attention. I think we were best just going. But that's pretty incredible. Okay, I'll let you go, Boris. Thanks for the report.
No problem.
Okay, I really don't have a program tonight. If there's anything anybody would like to talk about, I'd be glad to. If we could just have an open session, or if somebody wants to call in, or I'd be happy to take some calls. It's incredible that we wanted to have a peaceful religious meeting. That we were really, it was a meeting. It wasn't a meeting to attract anybody to our ideology. It was only a meeting designed to give certain groups who have dissension within our ideology a chance to voice their opinions. And Eli and I had basically set this meeting up knowing that the Paul bashers in Israel Identity probably would not show up, but that they would have the opportunity, if they were really sincere about and could defend what they believed, that they would have the opportunity to show up and to initiate a discourse concerning the differences between us. Because these people claim to be Israel Identity or Christian Identity, and yet they're Paul bashers. And that's basically why we had planned this and set this meeting up. So that the Paul bashers can't say, well, we told you so, because they couldn't show up to tell us so. I mean, we have to confront the divisions amongst ourselves, and that's the honest way to do it, is to put something out there and give the people who disagree with us the opportunity to meet with us and initiate a dialogue about those things. So basically, the Paul bashers in Israel Identity who were invited to this meeting and never replied to the invitations, they've been exposed. As far as I'm concerned, they're phonies. They've been exposed. They couldn't even reply to an invitation. So that was the purpose of this meeting. And I got to meet Eli, which was actually too brief of a meeting, even in a restaurant. Eli has returned to Bob Martin's house in Pennsylvania, where he'll be spending tonight and probably be returning to Chicago tomorrow. And that was a long drive from Chicago to Binghamton, New York for a canceled meeting. But what can we do? You have anything to say, Greg?
Well, I had the same thought. It was a, you know, I felt bad for Eli's sake, and also for Skip up from Virginia, that, you know, these brothers drove a long way for, like you said, a simple meeting that we weren't even out looking to make converts of anyone. Just a meeting to edify ourselves, to build up ourselves and fellowship. And even that wasn't allowed by the by our protesters that, you know, no doubt used many slurs against us to the owner of that or the manager of that American Legion. But, you know, like I said, we ended up getting to spend some good time together. It wasn't enough, but it was something. And I also got to meet Eli today for the first time, which was a good experience. You know, I've heard him many times on the radio, and now I know what he looks like, and he's a good guy. I appreciated my time with him today, even as short as it was. It would have been nice to really delve into the scriptures concerning Paul. I was looking forward to hearing the messages myself. I know we had talked about Paul being accused in his writings of being a universalist, which I personally have never seen that when I've read his writings. So I was interested to see that apparently there's a group in Israel Identity that thinks Paul was a universalist, which seems absurd to me. I can think of numerous passages where it would point out just the opposite of that. So I was curious. You know, I'm open to hear what other people have to say, and I'm not an argumentative type of person. But I'm open to hear other Christian Identity people, hear what they have to say. I'm a learner myself. I don't even pretend to know near anything as far as, you know, knowing the whole Bible. There's so much to know, but I know this. Paul belongs in the Bible. Paul's writings belong in the Word. And if there's a problem, then I would view the problem as in our understanding of it, not the writings itself, or maybe translational issues on certain verses could be made more clear. I'm sure that was going to be coming out today, but maybe we'll get another opportunity to have that meeting in the future, perhaps in a more secure location. I'd certainly be open to go just about anywhere. And I don't know. Personally, today was still a rich day for me, hanging out with good Israel brothers and even at this moment doing that. And all in all, a good day.
The question arises about Paul bashing. I know a Paul basher in Israel Identity. He's in Michigan. He's been involved in Israel Identity for 40 years. He's still a friend of mine. He was a good friend of mine. We did 2 years in federal prison together, and that's where I met him. And he was actually not a Paul basher when he went home in July of 1999. He met Gary Blackwell, a Christian Identity pastor, supposedly, in Michigan, and was initiated into Paul bashing. The unstable and the unlearned, and I believe that I can call him that, amongst us accept the Judeo-Christian interpretations of Paul's epistles. And because it is Paul's epistles especially, not exclusively, but especially, which are used by the universalists to support their position that the unlearned amongst us would grow to dislike Paul of Tarsus, because no universalist can be good. And that's the position they take. So what do they do? One prominent Paul basher in Identity is W.G. Finley, whom everybody seems to love simply because he's a white minister in South Africa. But that doesn't make him a good white minister in South Africa. He might be a good white man, but he sure as heck isn't a good minister because he's a Paul basher. He claims to have the Identity message, yet he quotes very consistently in his positions given against Paul of Tarsus, the rabbi Joachim Prince from Newark, New Jersey, 3 miles from where I grew up. Joachim Prince is a Jewish rabbi, a homosexual embracer, and a typical Talmudic pervert, and W.G. Finley, the Paul basher, uses Joachim Prince's writing to support his positions against Paul. Well, of course a rabbi is going to lie about Paul. Another prominent Paul basher is Clayton Douglas. Clayton Douglas he's been a correspondent for the Spotlight, and he's had his own supposedly patriotic, right-wing, conservative, whatever you want to call it, publication for many years. And he is a Paul basher, and in articles that he published in his publication against Paul of Tarsus, he quoted at length Joachim Prince, and he quoted John Spong. He quoted John Spong at great length. Who is John Spong? John Spong is an Episcopalian bishop from Newark, New Jersey, the same town Joachim Prince is from. And John Spong was the first Episcopalian bishop to ordain homosexual ministers in the Episcopalian Church. That's who John Spong is, an embracer of homosexuals. John Spong was at the cutting edge of the civil rights movement in North Carolina in the 50s and 60s. John Spong is an embracer of Negroes. And this is the man Clayton Douglas quotes from to bash Paul of Tarsus. This is who the Paul bashers turn to, Jews and homosexuals, to bash a Christian. How could a Christian quote a Jew and a homosexual and accept their testimony against another Christian? That's just incredible. That's unbelievable. On my website, I have a paper, and there's a PDF file that I just made a PDF copy of it, for those of you who would like to print it, called William Fink versus the Paul Bashers. None of the slanders or accusations against Paul of Tarsus stand up to scholarship. Not one of them. It's just incredible that there should be somebody in Israel identity who could bash Paul of Tarsus. Paul of Tarsus was the glue that stuck the gospel to lost Israel. We have an epistle from James to the 12 tribes. James doesn't tell us who the 12 tribes are. We have a couple of epistles from Peter written to certain peoples in Asia Minor. But Peter doesn't tell us who the lost sheep are. We have an epistle from Jude, but Jude doesn't tell us who the lost sheep are. We have the four gospels, and we have the admonition from Yahshua Christ that the gospel is only for the lost sheep. But the gospels don't tell us who they were. There was no mission of Paul of Tarsus to the Chinese people. Paul didn't go to India. There's no epistle of Paul to the Rhodesians. There's no epistle of Paul to the Hutus or the Tutsis. Paul didn't go to Ethiopia or Egypt. Paul only went to the white people of Europe, period. All of his epistles are written to white people in Europe. Paul knew where the lost sheep were. Paul went to Rome, told the Romans that Abraham was their forefather. Paul went to Corinth and told the Corinthians that their ancestors were in the Exodus. How could that be? Paul went to the Galatians, who were Celts, and told them that they descended from Isaac. How did the Celts descend from Isaac? Well, they did. How were the Corinthians' ancestors in the Exodus? Well, they were. How did the Romans descend from Abraham? Well, they did. The Paul bashers don't know their history. The Jews, they know about Paul's mission to the nations. They want to conceal it. They don't want you to find out. So they bash Paul, and we follow, or those of us who do follow, are following the Jews and stealing the gospel from Israel. Greg, you went to Bible school.
Yes, and just listening to you, Bill, it's just so clear that wolves have entered in. There's got to be an occasional wolf shooting into Christian identity here and there just to cause these type of problems. And a wolf can probably be traced directly back to a Jew more times than not, if not every single time. Just throwing us distractions, throwing us false doctrine, teachings, just getting us off course. And, you know, what better way than to cast a shadow of an evil light on, you know, the majority of the New Testament written by Paul, that it was wrong. And your points are really good about Paul being the apostle to the nations and being the glue, you know, that really sticks, Israel to the gospel message, that it was exclusively for Israel and not the world in general. And you referenced that I went to Bible college, and I did. I have a degree in Bible, a four-year degree from a fundamental Baptist Bible college down in the South, and came out thinking that I knew theology pretty well. Studied it for 3 or 4 years, got a degree, was ready to go be a minister, and did that for a while. And, you know, Yahweh so mercifully in my recent past brought me across the ministry of brothers like Eli and yourself, and came across the teachings of Bertrand Comparé and Wesley Swift, and just began to read and begin to have my eyes open, and really saw that there was the nations. Yahshua Christ came to save a group of people referred to in the Bible as the nations, the descendants of the 12 tribes of Israel, the Anglo-Saxons. And that was the biggest revelation to me of all the Bible things that I've learned and have learned recently, that Israel, us, we, the Anglo-Saxon race, we are that group. And all the salvation of the Bible is for that group and that group alone. And that's a very divisive message, and clearly at the heart of the, you know, that and the fact of, that we identify the Jews directly as descendants of Cain, descendants of Satan. Those two truths are the truths that are a sword that just divides, as the Bible prophesied that the word would be a dividing word, like a sword. And it's no wonder today that there was protest against us. It's just a sign that we've tapped into the truth, in my view. I'd be concerned if we had this message and didn't have protesters. It would make me question it. But the fact that Satan rises up when we get together, I feel is a very positive sign. And needless to say, in Bible college, none of this was taught to me. The message was strictly a universal message. Any man, woman on the face of this earth, no matter what race they are, Jesus died for them. And they pray a simple prayer of faith. We were taught that that person is saved and born again at that moment, and their sins are forgiven and they go to heaven. And you hear that message enough from people that are so-called theologians and have seminary degrees and doctor of theology degrees. Who are you to question it? you know, and you pretty much just swallow it because it's the party line, and you know, there's enough verses that you can snatch at random out of the Bible that can substantiate such a view. You know, if you don't look closely at the context, don't look at the Bible as a whole, and you know, Christendom in general specializes in that type of a shallow interpretation of the word. A verse here, a verse there, build a doctrine around it, and all of a sudden you have a theology that becomes, you know, your tenets of faith. And you say it enough times and teach it enough times, all of a sudden no one questions it anymore. And one thing I appreciate, and again you mentioned it earlier, that Christian identity stands up to intense scholarship, and we haven't come up with funny theologies that can't be backed up with many, many, many verses. And the fact of salvation and Yahshua Christ coming only for the exiled and lost tribes of Israel is a tremendous truth, and I never get tired of hearing about that. And just what you were saying about Paul being the apostle to the nations. And that's exactly what he did. He didn't go to all these other countries filled with races that Yahshua Christ didn't come for. Yahshua Christ said specifically that he came for the lost children of Israel, the lost tribes. And Paul just not just continued that ministry, but really expounded and expanded the knowledge of that and took that message to the nations. And I frankly really don't understand Paul Beshers. My only thought would be they are lacking in understanding, and hopefully some of them had planned on coming today, and I don't know, maybe they just were afraid to have their views examined closely. And I don't think had they come today it would have been any kind of a contentious thing, at least on our part. You never know how it might have worked out, but you know, Paul's message to me is just right on the money, very specific, and there's a lot of verses that back that up. I know we could get into that, but
what did they teach you in Bible college about? Didn't they talk about 1 Corinthians chapter 10? When Paul told the Corinthians, all our ancestors had gone through the cloud and all were baptized in the cloud and in the sea. What did they teach about that? What did they? How could they take that anything but literally? Did they?
Here was the general big picture view that Israel was Israel, meaning whoever you want to call them. Of course, we were taught that the Jews were Old Testament Israel, and the fact that the Jews had rejected Jesus when he came, their time had come, and all of a sudden now the Gentiles are on the scene. The Jews had their chance. They'll be saved later on. And now it's the Gentiles' time. And the Gentile, of course, meaning all the non-Jews. You know, that whole deceptive thing is completely prevalent throughout Christianity, including the Bible universities, the seminaries. They've completely swallowed that lie, that the Jews, the people today that we know as Jews, were all the Old Testament patriarchs. Of course, to them, Moses, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, the 12 children of Israel, all the prophets, Yahshua, of course, all of them Jews, according to this philosophy. So when you come to these type of passages, it was easy to, with that type of a view in mind, you could just say, well, that was the Old Testament Jews. You know, that's what they was going on. They were God's chosen in the Old Testament. But now it's the Gentiles, and Paul was the apostle to the Gentiles, the non-Jews, and you know, if you have those kind of blinders on, it's a superficial way to explain all of those type of verses.
Well, he was certainly apostle to the non-Edomites.
Once
scripture is translated properly, and that's Acts 13:46 that you're elucidating that the Judeo-Christian theologians rely upon for their false theology. Once scripture is properly translated, none of that holds up. And once it's interpreted in context, universalism does not hold up. universalism falls apart at every turn in properly translated scripture.
No question. And I mean, just the term Jew and Gentile alone, how much deception is involved in Bible translations and the King James Version. But just those two words, Jew and Gentile. And 99% of Christendom, when they hear the word Gentile, they think non-Jew. And that same 99%, when they hear the word Jew, they think God's chosen people. And so the whole Bible is a mystery to them with such a clouded view of those words.
Absolutely. Neither word belongs in the Bible. Gary, do you have something to say?
Hello?
Hello.
Oh, hi, Bill. Gary in San Diego. How are you?
That's what I said. How are you?
Oh, well, they cut out half of what you said. All I heard was, that's what happened. All I heard her say is, you're unmuted. And when she was talking, that's what
I'm sorry. I forgot about that required delay. I said, Gary, do you have something to say?
Yeah, as I was listening along, I was listening to you this morning.
This morning?
Well, it wasn't this morning, but I was able to listen this morning because I think it was last night's show. I had to be someplace, so I couldn't listen to it, so I got it this morning. And I think one of the things that I've noticed when I listened to you and Eli, and I think you might even had Greg on with you last time, on Friday, I'm not sure.
Yes, Greg was here last night.
And one of the things, when you guys were going through the scriptures and you're putting the proper translation into the Greek and just the New Testament, forget the Old Testament. I mean, if you ever got a hold of the Old Testament, I mean, it'd be a whole bunch of problems if they'd have.
I don't read Hebrew. I'm sorry.
I know, but I'm just saying if you were able to, I could see how this thing would just be like a come to life. But it already has. There were so many things that you guys found. For instance, on the part where it talks about the 10 virgins, you gave a translation on that. Where it talks about the guy that wasn't dressed properly. You guys gave a proper definition or proper interpretation of what was going on, and just those few that I'm thinking of right now, that it appears like that the original translators of the King James, to me, it just looks like they did it on purpose.
Well, my attitude is this. The Englishmen, I mean, they had a lot of influence from the Jews, don't get me wrong, and the Catholics, and don't get me wrong. However, the Englishmen, and not only them, but Martin Luther and Calvin and Knox and Whittingham and Coverdale and Tinsdale, when these men translated the New Testament, they knew that they were in the picture, but they didn't understand how they were in the picture. In other words, the Englishmen of the 1600s did not have the benefit of archaeology that we have today. Today, we read the Assyrian inscriptions in cuneiform out of the ground, and we see that the deported Israelites were called Cymri. And we see that refers to the same people that the Greeks called Kimeroi and the Persians called Saka. And we know that from Persian inscriptions, the Assyrian.
Thanks, Raven.
Cymri were the Persian Saka and the Greek Kimeroi, from where we get the word Cimmerian.
Well, Ray Kapp, Dr. Kapp, he uncovered all that, and he did
a guy named Donald Luckinbill uncovered it. E. Raymond Kapp realized its impact on Christianity. Okay?
Okay.
However, in the 1600s, they didn't know that the English were part of the actual physical lost sheep of the House of Israel. Luther, when he made the Luther Bible, he didn't know that. They knew from the Spirit that they belonged in the picture, but they didn't know how. So when they encountered all these words and all these verses, they basically had to translate, they had to interpret them in the most universal sense. because they knew they fit in. But if they interpreted them with very strict Greek, they knew they were excluded, I believe. They had to fudge them. They had no choice.
Is Brother Craig still there?
Yes.
Yeah, I was just wondering, when you went to seminary, when you were talking, how did the seminary, for instance, deal with Hebrews 13:8, the same yesterday and day forever?
Mm-hmm.
And then you go to John 1 and John 2, where it says, those who do not believe that Jesus Christ came in the flesh are the Antichrist. How did they get to skate around that? That's absolutely amazing. If the Jews are God's chosen people, the Bible doesn't say, right here says they're the Antichrist.
And John also explained that many Antichrists had already been born.
So that means that we don't have to wait for them. To my understanding of what you just said, Bill, you don't have to wait for the Antichrist to come.
We're already there.
There you go. And then I just want to know how, seminaries, how they got around that. Maybe Brother Greg there could explain that to us a little bit. That was always been interesting to me, and I wanted to find somebody that had been to seminary to explain that.
Well, the general thought would be that since the Jews were God's chosen people as they saw it, that no matter what those Antichrist verses were saying, it couldn't be the Jews because they're God's chosen people. It's a real circular kind of a reasoning. So immediately the Jews would be eliminated. So it would have to be someone else. And, once you see the fact that the Jews are not only not God's chosen people, but Satan's genetic children, that strips away all of that type of theology instantly and exposes it. And I would also say that even though it was seminary, and Bible university training, don't think that that's any kind of deep training, deep theology, really diving into the truth. All the textbooks that I used to have, systematic theology and blah, all that stuff, it's just spouting off memorized so-called orthodox doctrines that were accepted, and really not digging into them very much. Because let's face it, if you really think that the Jews of today are God's chosen people, you really haven't dug into that very much in the Bible and taken a look. Because, John chapter 8 alone explodes that myth and tears it apart. And Revelation 2:9 and 3:9, where Yahshua specifically addresses those that are calling themselves the false Judeans. And, there's a whole clear picture through the whole Bible that the Jews are not God's chosen people.
And in Paul, in Paul, Romans 16:20 and 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 both explain that the people in the temple in Judea are really devils.
When you guys talk about the Paul bashers, I was one time, I guess this is about 7 years ago or so, I found some people and I was talking to them on the phone. I said, I've been into identity so long, blah, blah, blah. I probably had about maybe 8-9 years. And they said, Paul wasn't right. This is the first time I ever heard of this, Paul bashing. And it was with Judy Nipps and some of that crowd. And Judy Nipps at one time was married to, what's his name that's up there with Hal Turner?
James Wickstrom.
Yeah. And so
I have to say in public, because she said it in public, she's run her mouth in public, I have absolutely no respect for Judith Nipps.
No, but so they sent me I got a whole bunch of books over here on Paul bashing. And, in other words, what they do is they find somebody it appears like this identity. A lot of them are identity. I'm not going to take that away from them. Just because your identity doesn't mean your doctrine's right. I know some other pastors out there, and you know them too as well as I do, Bill, that, their identity, but their doctrine's got some holes in it.
Well, there's a lot of clowns that claim to be identity these days. As far as I'm concerned, most of them are clowns.
Yeah, well, you see, when I say identity, they know they're Israel. Knowing you're an Israelite and being stupid is, Nothing
right,
unique
but
about that.
Knowing that you're Israel is only half of the identity equation.
There you go.
Because there were two seeds in Genesis 3:15. Who were the other seed?
Well, you had
half the people in identity deny that.
But this is what I wanted to ask you. You see, I look at it this way. We were blessed, and you might not accept this right. I hope you do. Understand what I'm saying? We in identity were blessed that God sent you to prison. Because if you wouldn't have went there, you'd have probably went on with your career and would not have the things of knowledge that you have today that you can share with us. Gave you an opportunity to be mainly by yourself, able to go and learn these things. I mean, you're right up there with these so-called theologians. You're above them.
Well, I really don't like to talk about myself. I'm sorry. I don't.
Yeah, but I'm talking about it. You don't have to. I'm telling you how I feel. And so when you say things, you know, I have respect for it because God did that for us. You know, He used you as a vessel, but it was for us, just like He did Paul. I mean, do you think Paul enjoyed being thrown off that chariot? You know, his face rubbed in the dirt, can't see, he's blind, and God comes to him and says, "Why are you kicking at me?" You know, Paul says, "Who's you?" You know, and he had to go to a Christian to get his eyes healed. So, you know, so it's always the same thing. Paul was a benefit to us, and it's with how God does that is.
Well, absolutely. My viewpoint is that if it weren't for Paul of Tarsus, the people in Europe probably would have never heard of Yahshua Christ.
That's correct. And you see,
we have stories about, Andrew went here, and we have stories that Philip went there. And that's what they are. I'm sorry. They're stories. They're myths and traditions, and there's nothing wrong with myths and traditions, but myths and traditions are not proof. We have proof that Paul went to the places where he wrote to.
And those were in Europe.
And we have proof that Paul was telling these people that they were indeed the lost sheep of the house of Israel.
Now, and we do know that Europeans, at least 25 years ago or and more, were considered a white people. Now, if Paul is sent amongst the Europeans, all these places are all Europe, including Turkey at the time, was white, and they know that.
Well, absolutely. Turkey was Greek and Celtic, and if you want to see what Greeks looked like at that time, I mean, you could open up any one of 100 Greek books where they describe themselves as being blonde or red-haired, and they weren't all blonde or red-haired, but that was very predominant, and gray-eyed or blue-eyed, and they had ivory-white skin.
Yeah, I see a lot of
pictures of Greeks from Greek art all over my website that show that. And there's testimonies on my website and citations from Homer, Hesiod, Euripides. These people didn't look like the Greeks of today. I mean, there probably are still some white people in Greece today, but most of them are really Jews or Turks or Arabs.
They got mixed. I remember when I was listening to Pastor Craig just right now, or Brother Greg, and I can remember going to a church right over here by where I lived. We moved here looking for a church. It was a small church, and as I went in there, the pastor was sitting there, senior pastor, and he had his associate pastor sitting there, and I looked over at him, and he certainly looked Jewish to me, and so anyway, we're all talking, so I asked him about some scriptures, the lost sheep of the house of Israel, and some of this stuff, and the Jewish associate pastor says, "I know where you're going with this." I said, "So you do." So when it came down, they called me anti-Semitic. And I says, "I'm not anti-Semitic." I says, "I'm anti-Jew." And I said, "I'm going to tell you guys something." And then the senior pastor had the gumption to say that I was not a Christian and don't call myself a Christian.
There you have it. It's not the Holocaust deniers who were a threat to liberties in this nation. It's
no.
The Christ deniers who were a threat to liberties.
And I told him straight to his face, I says, "I'm not the one that takes the Antichrist and worshiped him. I don't do that. Well, he kicked me right out of his office. If I didn't get out of his office, he's going to call the police. You know, so I've been kicked out of a few churches. Another one I was kicked out of, you know, by another preacher. So, you know,
well, I hate to tell you, Gary, I wouldn't go try to get kicked out of a church. I'm sorry, I couldn't do it.
I didn't try to. Just when I tried to share with them, they got really excited. You know, it's just like I asked Brother Greg there some questions on some of the stuff and how in the cemeteries, you know, what they teach. And, you know, these guys are supposed to be Greek scholars. Well, I'm sitting here talking to a Greek scholar, and you disagree 100% with these guys. Obviously, they're just saying what they've been told to say.
Scholarship in Bible colleges and seminaries is way overrated. You know, they're essentially just parroting long-held traditions and doctrines that, you know, really, if you wanted to really pin them down, they would struggle to prove it. This just happened to me a couple of days ago. I ran into a young guy and struck up a conversation with him, and he just had finished his four-year degree as a Bible major from a Christian university. And he was all excited, you know, just graduated here in May and was looking to get into some type of a full-time assistant pastor type of a position. And he didn't really know me. And, you know, as a young guy, probably 24, 25, we struck up a conversation. And, you know, I mentioned briefly my background, that I had a four-year degree in Bible and had kind of been where he was. And, you know, I kind of steered the conversation a little bit into the Bible, and I said, you took a lot of theology courses? And he goes, oh, yeah, tons of theology, probably 2 or 3 years worth of theology. And I asked him, I said, what did they teach you about what happened in the Garden of Eden with Eve? And he went blank. He looked at me like I had asked some type of bizarre thing from another language, and he goes, well, what do you mean what happened? And I said, well, what did they teach you? What happened? What was that interaction that took place between Eve and the serpent? And he's looking at me, and he immediately was reaching for the typical Judeo-Christian eating an apple from the forbidden tree concept. And I let him kind of flounder for about a minute, and I said, did they teach you anything about Satan being the serpent and him physically seducing Eve and having sexual intercourse with her and her having a son with the genetic makeup of the devil himself named Cain? And he looked at me. I'm telling you, what a look. I wish I had taken a photo of it. It'd be a great photo. And he looked at me and he goes, and then I followed up with that and I said, you know, that line continues to this day, and that's the people known as Jews. I'm guessing that they didn't teach you that in any of your theology classes. And by that time, his hair was rising on the back of his neck, and he goes, well, isn't that what the white supremacists teach? That's immediately what he said, you know, and right away.
That's how they take you away from it.
Yeah, and his defense mechanisms went up, and, you know, I wasn't, I told him, I said, listen, I'm not trying to make a convert here. I said, I've been where you are. I studied what you studied, and for years I taught what you studied. And I said, I've seen more, and I've seen if you take a look, an open-minded look. Even just look at the verse Genesis 3:15 and take it apart word by word, and what is being said to whom, and what do the words mean? It's clear enough. Eve is going to have children. Satan is going to have a seed, and seed equals seed in that verse, and they're both going to have a line of children. And why is that such a controversial thing when it's right there, even in a, you know, some of the off translations like the King James. My parting word to him was, if nothing else, I said, do me a favor. Read the book of Enoch with an open mind. Go through that book, even though it's not in the Bible. I said, read the book of Enoch and see if you get any light from it. And, Bill, I'd run upstairs to grab this thing that I was going to use in my message earlier today. I wanted to just read a few verses from Enoch, chapter 104. Going back to the Paul bashers a little bit, and just the confusion and the twisting of the word. In Enoch chapter 104, starting down at around the latter part of verse 9, it says, let's see, "And I know this mystery, that sinners will alter and pervert the words of righteousness in many ways, and will speak wicked words and lie and practice great deceits and write books concerning their words." That seems to point to the Talmud to me, that they're going to be writing specific books and practicing great deceits. "But when they write down truthfully all my words in their languages, and do not change or minish aught from my words, but write them down all truthfully, all that I first testified concerning them, then I know another mystery, that books will be given to the righteous and the wise to become a cause of joy and uprightness and much wisdom. And to them shall the books be given, and they shall believe in them and rejoice over them. Then shall all the righteous who have learnt therefrom all the paths of uprightness be recompensed." That's Enoch chapter 104. And that's a book that, even though it's not included in our Bible, our English Bible, there's a tremendous amount of truth in there. And I think you could make a much better argument that Enoch should be in the Bible than that it should not be in the Bible. But you read through it, and I think you'll see why the powers that voted on that book didn't want it in there, because it really lays out a lot of truth.
My understanding is Enoch, Jubilee, and a few others, along with the Apocrypha, were in the original text, but then you had some people in there said, wait a minute, we can't have that in there, because that's going to divulge the truth, and we don't need that. Because
exactly
we got to get...
Oh, I see it, Gary. I, you know, you can argue back and forth whether those books should be in the canon or not, but the truth that is in there really cuts right to the truth.
Well, if you compare Jude's epistle verses 4 through 12 with 1 Enoch, as we know it in the Charles edition, chapter 15, verses 1 through 10, and chapter 16, then you'll know that Jude definitely considered the book of Enoch to be scripture.
Right.
And so did Peter, who quotes it, and so did Paul. Paul makes about 50 quotes or allusions to the book of Enoch. And well, churchianity hides those. They don't cross-reference them.
It's these guys back 2,000 years ago, I would think that was part of their parchments, or whatever you want to call them, that they studied from. And they've been lost or misplaced or...
Right, but we need the warning that not all apocryphal books are good apocryphal books. And
well,
that, you know, that they have to, if they're well substantiated by scripture, then we should definitely consider them and take a close look at them.
Well, the reason I said the apocryphal is because one time you and Eli, Pastor Eli, were putting together some stuff, and you're quoting out of the Apocrypha on where it talked about Israel and who Israel is. And some of those parts that are in the Apocrypha.
Right,
well,
the books of the Maccabees are definitely valid historical books that belong in the Bible. That
mm-hmm.
They fill in a portion of the intertestamental period. Not anywhere near what we would like to fill in, but they fill in a good portion of it.
And I just wanted to ask Brother Greg another question. Jeremiah 31:31 and Hebrews 8:8. Jeremiah, of course, is forecasting or prophesying what's going to happen. Hebrews 8:8 says it's here, and that's the part where it says that there's going to be a new covenant,
uh-huh.
And a new covenant puts the laws in our heart. Now, when you go to, well, like the Baptists, but some of the others, they say, if you went to Baptists, they say that the law has been done away with. Wait a minute. That's not what Hebrews 8:8 says or Jeremiah 31:31. They say it's written in your heart. So if it's written in your heart, it hasn't gone anywhere except for off the book. And into you, into your mind, be there. And how do they explain that away?
Well, that's, Gary, keep in mind, that, like I said earlier, that's it's very shallow. I don't give them much credit for being deep thinkers. the whole concept that when they would say when you get saved, born again, whatever terminology you want to choose, and Jesus comes into you, at that point he's the one that would be writing his laws on your heart. So you don't need the stone tablets of Moses anymore. You have Jesus in your heart writing the law. And, again, anyone of any race, they would say, can have that experience. You know, and that's why you've got countless missionaries in the bowels of Africa trying to convert savages and literally wasting lifetimes and millions of dollars on people never designed to be in the covenant of salvation. Whatever their purpose is here, who knows, but... yeah, that's how they would cover that, you know.
So some of those people going over there, like I said, would become good meals. That's about it. In other words, for the savages, they cook them. And
you know, not that they can't go over and make some type of impact on these people, but as soon as they pack up and leave, you go back there a month later, do you think any of that pseudo-Christianity would still be going on?
As demonstrated by Desmond Tutu, you know, I mean, look what he's done with the word. He's just made a mockery of it. That goes back to the scriptures where the 5,000 and the 4,000, two times in the Bible, sat in front of our Savior, listened to him preaching, and then he fed them all. All right? And then it wasn't long after that when they were chanting, "Hang him, hang him." You know, so that who were these people that were sitting there listening to the Savior and the Beatitudes and what have you talking?
Well,
you know,
I don't think
only...
it was exactly the same crowd. It was probably, I'm sure there were some infiltrators amongst the 4,000 and the 5,000. But the Jews aren't going, the Edomites and the Canaanites, they're not going to readily follow Christ into the desert and hang out without food for 3 days.
No, they like to eat. Well, I just wondered, because I heard a sermon one time where some of those, like you just said, Bill, infiltrated, and they got the food, and then they went out. But, you know, I don't think that they knew they were going to get fed.
No, and that's why the Jew, the real Jew, the Edomite or Canaanite, wouldn't stick around in the first place.
They'd leave and go to the nearest restaurant. So obviously those people were there for the word. But, you know, then you wonder, where did all the people come from that were around the cross? And some of them were Israelites.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt some of them are Israelites. Just like 50 million white people had to vote for Obama.
Isn't that sad? And 40% of the white women voted for him. I guess they didn't look in the mirror that morning.
For a Negro to get elected in this country, 50 million white people had to vote for him.
That is a shame.
And they were the people who would have been standing around the cross crucifying Christ, helping the Edomites crucify Christ. Because right now they've helped Obama and the little Jew ballet dancer crucify Christians. And that's what's going to happen every chance they get.
Well, I do know that as I think about this, I hear these people that, now these are white women, and I was in a meeting, and they say they're all Christians, and they're standing around, and you talk about the Bible, you know, and I think they're Judeo-Christians, and rah, rah, rah. Why would you vote for a man that believes like he does? Well, he's a Christian. I said,
"Oh, right." And they're all misled, but hopefully.
His pastor was, what's his name, Wright or Rice or something like that. And I said, he went to a racist church. If the pastor of your church, I pointed out to him, spoke like that about our people, they'd be all over him like stink on tongue.
they didn't print that in USA Today. So those people, most of them don't know it. And like I said, they were all misled, most of them. And hopefully the punishment they receive the next 4 years for voting for them might wake some of them up. Who knows?
I know that we're commanded to search the scriptures, Bill.
Yeah, and that's the last thing that the Judeo-Christian does.
That's right. So I'm just wondering, because he says, don't be deceived. That's a command, don't be deceived. And a lot of us are being deceived. Obviously, that's a breaking of the law. So shouldn't punishment be exacted on
that
issue?
Well, the problem is that it says it says in Scripture that one has to search the Scriptures. And since most Judeo-Christians don't read Scripture, they don't read the admonition that they should search the Scriptures. I mean, if you don't seek, you won't find.
Well, I know when I used to go to a Judeo-Christian church, I was Assembly of God, and we'd go there, and I'd go there hourly and so I could go to Bible class. All Bible class was the guy standing in the front telling us what the Bible had to say, and then when I go into church, the sermon is telling us what the Bible had to say. One of the things that really bothered me, you know, I was single. I had two so-called Christian women leave me, so I'd still go to church. And it was Mother's Day, and they were in there, and you know, I knew what it was going to be, you know, rah rah the women, and I that didn't bother me. But when I went in there on Father's Day, and the same sermon was given, in other words, us men ought to be happy for our women, and we ought to do this for our women. You know, I stood up in a church. Now, the church, this particular church, held about 1,200 people packed, and it was packed all the time. And I stood up, and I said, you know, you guys are something else. And I says, I heard this last Mother's Day. When are you going to give a sermon for the men? And I says, you guys are not coming from the Scriptures. I know that, and I got to walk. Of course, they wanted to send some guys to help me out the door. And I left, and that's before I even knew the idea any message. You know, I stood up and did that. So, but I've always been sort of, you know, nasty in some ways. You know, I'd do that if it doesn't set right with me. I didn't care who heard me. I'd say it. And I became very unpopular with those people real quick. Heard the same sermon twice, Bill. Same sermon, Mother's Day and Father's Day. What about the men? You know, in this country, don't we have a right to anything except for being dogged and damned and trashed? You know, and this is what's happened to our people. I was saying last week. You know, we don't have control over our women. Now, I don't know how old you guys are, but you know, I'm pushing, you know, getting close to 70, and when I was a kid, You didn't go out with a guy or go marry a guy unless you asked dad. You asked him first, and he gave an okay, yay or nay. Because I remember when my brother was taking this girl out, and her father went to the pastor and says, I don't want her going with that guy. So my brother had to back off, couldn't do it anymore. And that's the way it was when I was a kid.
Well, that's because people don't realize that the sexual revolution and the feminist revolution and the other so-called revolutions of the 60s and 70s, they were orchestrated by the Jew. They were announced in the 50s. The Jews made their plans known in the 1950s. If you don't believe me, just go read Howl by that Jew Ginsburg. These revolutions were publicly announced. And the media and the Jews in academia orchestrated these revolutions, and they used the cultural battle and their strength in the media and in academia to mislead our people right down the primrose path into the position we're in today. Free love, feminism, and every other vile credo of the Marxist Jew.
Bill, would you say, by not having the young girls ask their father the way it was when I was a kid, what she didn't ask, you know, here's Joe, you know, and him and I want to go together, and the dad says, no, you're not. And that was the end of the story. Now, by not having that, would that be, in a roundabout way, starting to cause a rebellion between the kids and the parents, and then finally going to mom and dad, a rebellion between them. I've seen, because of some of this stuff, I've seen rebellion between the parents now because there's argument going on, because there's argument coming from the kids. So I just wondered, do you think that that would be a start of it?
Well, I'm sorry, can you please phrase that again?
Well, the first rebellion was the girls just going behind the father's back. I'm going to go elope. I'm going to go do this. In other words, a rebellion. And then it appears like the rebellion expanded, you know, where both the kids are doing this now. And they weren't listening to the parents anymore. And then now because mom would say, well, you shouldn't treat little Nancy like that.
Well, right, but it was the Jewish media. It was the hippie culture. And they attracted our children, and it was the communist professors in our academic institutions that instigated the rebellion.
See, now here's another thing that I can remember when I was a kid. You know, I'd be sitting there doing something in the front room. My mom would be standing there on her ironing board, ironing, watching, you know, as the world burns on you know, one of those soap opera things on TV.
Well, that's an idol. That soap opera is an idol. People don't realize that. That soap opera is an idol. That sitcom is an idol. If you spend half an hour a day prostrated in front of Seinfeld, you may as well put a Jew up on the altar of a temple and worship him. That's what you're doing.
I don't like that.
That is an idol. You are spending half an hour of your day when you should be doing the will of God, and you could spend that half an hour a day looking after your brethren. You could go help the old widow woman next door for half an hour a day. But no, people sit in front of the TV 4 hours a night and worship. They're worshiping the Jews.
Well, there's one thing that maybe you and Brother Greg can talk about there a little bit, is when I watch television or see a movie, I always see a guy that looks Jewish, you know, looks Jewish to me, and the woman and woman or women that are married to him or chasing him around are always Israelite women, blue-eyed blondes.
Of course they are.
Every time.
And Adam Sandler, and I don't watch movies, but I couldn't help where I spent the last 12 years at least walking by the TV rooms and seeing the commercials. And I would walk into the TV room, and I'd watch for about 5 or 10 minutes, and then I'd abuse all the white guys sitting in front of that TV room for watching it, and I'd walk out. And that was like a nightly ritual for me. And I would watch 5 or 10 minutes of television, and I'd see the advertisements or Seinfeld or Adam Sandler, and I just couldn't believe the things I saw. But that is what they promote. That's the perversion they promote, and that sets an example.
Yeah, Bill, let me make a comment on that. It's hard to really get your mind around the level of Jewish takeover of this society. And you mentioned earlier about the family and the breakdown of the family, and just the breakdown of just the society, morality in general. But you can trace it all back to the Jews. Jews in Hollywood, how they have propelled Jews to become stars, and you know, Bill mentioned a couple of names, and I mean the list of names. If you start taking a look at anyone who's a star in Hollywood, the vast majority of them are Jews, because if you're not a Jew in Hollywood, you know, why should they make you a success? They take care of their own. But my main point was going back to the family. War has been declared by the Jew on the white family worldwide, but just specifically the United States. The breakdown of our family, any way that the family can be attacked, you know, economically, so the wife has to have two careers in the house to support a family, and the white men have tremendous struggle right now finding work, because you know, many of the other races have been propelled forward far beyond their capabilities and been handed the jobs that white men should be doing, and leaving white men to scramble for employment. And to me, a big pointer to the Jewish breakdown of the family is how they've just propelled homosexual marriage into such a huge issue right now. I'm 54 years old. I've seen a lot in my life. I'm an observer of human behavior. I like to pay attention to what's going on around me. And I would never have seen such a thing as this coming, where two homosexuals could actually be married and a state would sanction it. And it would be sanctioned that they could adopt children and they could be called a family. And the textbooks are being shoved down the throats of our elementary, even kindergarten school children, demanding that they learn that this is just as normal of a family as a man and a woman. And if you speak out against it, then, you know, you're the one with the problem. All of this can be traced back to Jews, every single bit of it. And we kind of walk around with a mist, not so much the Christian Identity Brethren. We're probably the only group that really sees it for what it is, that war has been declared on our race, on the Anglo-Saxon race, by the race spawned from Satan. And they seek our destruction. They seek to destroy us in any way possible. And they have many avenues at their disposal. The media, the education, the health system. You could go on and on. The whole economic system. And they come at us from many different ways. And yet most of our race sits there and calls them God's chosen people of the Old Testament. It's enough to make you pull your hair out when you take a look at it. But yet I really believe that in these latter days, the small handful, relative small handful of us that see it for what it really is, and the brothers and sisters on this program that see the truth and the reality of this, there's power in this. There has to be. You know, we don't see these things for no reason. And I believe that Yahweh is going to really do something concerning this. Certainly it's going to bring judgment on these terrors, these Jews, and they're going to get the judgment they so richly deserve here one of these days. And in the meantime, I just believe that as a group, we should be praying imprecatory prayers to hasten this judgment. And I just, the other day, reading in Revelation, before certain of the judgments were to be released and they brought out the golden censers, which were the prayers of the saints, I just had a sense that those golden censers were not quite full yet. And the part of our job, seeing the truth of how war has been declared on Yahweh's people, we need to fill up the golden censers.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I think that the lesson I learned today is that in America, can I call New York America? I'm not sure about that. In America, even the American Legion, which is supposed to be an organization which stands in defense of the Constitution, made up of men who supposedly went and fought for the defense of the Constitution in the various wars, would cave in to the suppression of free speech and the exchange of ideas demanded by the Christ deniers, demanded by the Marxists. I can't believe that happened. Even with everything I know, I can't believe that the American Legion just caved in that easily to the Jewish Marxists and canceled our meeting that easily. That's incredible.
Well, Pastor Greg wrote something in the blog there, very interesting. He says, I guess he was there, he said they look like vegan homosexuals. Now, in my family, there's two women that are vegans, and both of them are lesbians. And I look at the crowd they hang out with. I don't want them around me. But anyway, they hang out with the people that are vegans, and they're all homosexuals, and they're all weird.
Yeah.
You know, and they're all left-wingers, and you will see them when you go downtown and you want to see these marches of the so-called leftists. You'll see every one of them in there.
Well, we estimated the protesters at around between 14 to 16. It was raining so hard we didn't stick around to count. It was absolutely pouring.
Yeah, the rain may have been to our benefit, because there may have been 100 and a little, I won't say it on the air, but but it was a hassle. The rain was hard in Binghamton and constant. And
praise God for that. I
was just going to say that all the protesters appeared to be white. And,
a little vegan.
Yeah, white, vegan, mostly female. I don't know. I didn't look that close, but
I would have liked the confrontation.
Me too. I wanted one, I must admit.
Well, the thing that I've noticed is these little lesbians, vegans, they're very quick with the mouth, and it's sharp, and it's not stupid. You know, they're very quick-witted with what they have to say. In other words, when they say something, you got to think a minute to respond. These young females. I don't call them women anymore. I call them females because woman is proper name for a lady. And, you know, and sometimes you'll see them with the strange colored hair and they got all kinds of jewelry sticking out through their skin. And
there was some of that. Clearly they're brainwashed, you know, Jewish stooges.
Well, that's the same thing that happened to our college. It's been happening to our college kids for 50, 60 years. The Marxists have a total grip on their minds.
Well, you go to Israel, and they're so much into white slavery, in other words, stealing our women throughout the world and bringing them over there for their pleasures. They, going back to the movies, if you ever notice, now we did note that the Jewish guys always have a blonde woman, but you'll notice that a black guy will be with a black woman. You'll see a Mexican guy with a Mexican woman, a Chinaman with a China woman. But you'll never see, for instance, a blue-eyed, blonde-haired woman with a blue-eyed, blonde-haired man. I'm still looking for that.
Well, the Jew wants to perpetuate the myth that they're white. And at a quick glance, they certainly can appear to be white. But a Jew, I don't care if they have blonde hair, blue eyes, it doesn't matter. A Jew is not a white Aryan person.
Because he opens his mouth, all the crap comes out.
Yeah. And
Bill said that as I was listening to his thing this morning. It might have been you, on how they've crept in because they look white. They've crept in amongst us.
Right, absolutely. That's how they've gotten their foot in the door, and that's how they always get it. That's how they did it in the 20s. That's how they permeated all of our institutions from the 1880s.
Well, you know, Hollywood isn't just a moneymaker for them. It's probably their greatest propaganda tool, you know, because, I mean, who among us didn't grow up watching TV and going to movies? And we saw so many of the great actors, and we come to find out most of them were Jews.
Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah, well, any Jewish woman that is attractive, and there are some that are outwardly attractive, they end up as the Hollywood actresses because the Jews want to push that notion out there that they're just like us. I think a guy that comes to mind, Cary Grant. I just found out recently he was a Jew.
It's queer.
Good-looking guy, you know. Who didn't like Cary Grant movies growing up? I'm in my 50s. I watched him growing up. I just found out he was a Jew. And the Jew uses Hollywood as their number one propaganda tool to put all the sheep people to sleep, thinking, the Jews, they're just like us. They're good-looking. They're funny. They're the Ben Stiller, Adam Sandler, Jerry Seinfelds. What a bunch of talented, what a great group of people they are. And they put us to sleep, and we stupidly belly up to the TV, you know, so many hours a day, and just suck in that poison. And there's no way not to be affected by it if you do that. I just, the older I get, the more I hate to watch anything on TV anymore, you know. It just because now I see the propaganda coming through, and I see the psyop, the psychological operation going on. And I recognize it. And not only do I hate it, but it makes me angry. And I end up not watching much TV any longer. Once you see these truths and you see what's going on, how can you enjoy it? How can you sit and watch it anymore?
You ever noticed movies that come out that are clean movies? There's a couple, I guess they're Judeo-Christian, but they put out clean movies in there. And they draw crowds. They don't talk about those, but they do draw crowds, and people like it. But then you get one by Jew, and I always say it whenever I see one, they have these voyeur scenes in them is what I call them, where you got, you know, I don't care if they're married or not, coming together and sucking all over each other, and then the next thing you know, you see them in the bed,
it's all part of the cultural battle that started really in during the 1920s with the flappers and jazz, which was primarily a Jewish invention, and some of the buffoonery that went on at that time. It's escalated a little at a time until we had the revolutions of the 60s and 70s and the total perversion that we deal with today.
Well, Bill, I know you've studied some of the issues. As you go into the 20s, you know, you had a great economy, as we call it today, going with a lot of money. You know, you go to work and you go, and after you get off, you go to the bar and drink things a person might do. It seems like when you have that uptime, this is what happens. They get out whatever they want to get out. Then it goes in the tank. Christianity starts to pick up again, and then they come in with it again. And it just seems, they call it a cycle, but it seems to be that way.
Yeah, it's a struggle, and it has been. And every once in a while, we might look temporarily like we're gaining the advantage, but there's no real victory. There's no victory until Yahshua Christ returns and his enemies are destroyed. The Reagan years may have looked good, and the 50s may have looked good, and for a little bit they seemed to be. But there were still things going on in the 50s that weren't good. Brown versus the Board of Education. What's up with that? That happened in the 50s.
Yeah, that was
still things in the Reagan. I mean, Reagan had the first amnesty for Mexicans.
Sure did.
And that was supposed to be the amnesty to end all amnesties.
Well, he was the governor of California, so I know what he did here.
Yeah, well, what I'm saying is that whether it's Democrat or Republican, whether the economy's doing good or doing bad, the same agenda advances one way or another.
Well, the way you can look at that, Bush was the governor of Texas, and everybody thought he was wonderful because he did a good job in Texas. But all that was a show to get him into the presidency where he can really do what the enemy wants done.
Well, yeah, but it can be questioned whether or not he really did a good job in Texas, too. I mean, Texas is a pretty conservative state and a very low tax state. And as long as they stay that way, they're naturally going to have a good economy. Low tax states naturally have a good economy.
Well, we don't have
that encourages and fosters business and innovation.
Well,
high tax states in the Northeast all have bad economies because high taxes do not encourage the growth of business and innovation.
Well, your state doesn't have it, neither does the state I'm in. And they're both high tax states.
Well, that's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm agreeing with you.
Marxism is not good for the growth of any economy or the innovation or if you can't enjoy the fruits of your labors, you're going to go to some place that you can or you're not going to have any labors.
Well, did you notice in your state there in New York, and then, of course, I'm going to tell you here in California, a lot of what they call multiculturalism is going on. I mean, they've been flooding both of these states with non-whites. And look what's happened in both of these two states.
Well, eventually the bubble's going to burst and all sin is going to be revealed, Gary. I'm gonna close this show. I mean, it's just about 9:30. Tomorrow afternoon at 12 o'clock, I will be hosting the Voice of Christian Israel, and I will have Clifton Emmaheiser here, and we will be discussing the women in the genealogy of Christ.
Hallelujah.
Rahab, Tamar, and Bathsheba, the wife of Uriah, who really was not a Hittite. Thank you, and good night.
God bless.
God bless.